At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Hotel Mars, episode end, continuing with David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show. And we're thrilled to have Anatoly Zak, the Russian space program historian who keeps the Russian space web, the man program and the robot program. We're concentrating on the man program now. We've just told the successful story of the prep for the Apollo-Soyuz mission of 1975. It was finally solved. All the upgrades were solved in August of 74. However, I learned from Anatoly there was something else that happened in August of 74. 50 years ago, right now, a secret mission to a secret orbiting space station by cosmonauts. It came under the rubric of Soyuz 15 mission. However, it launched in late August, 26 August, and from Turitam, which is the actual name, Anatoly tells me, of what we call Baikonur, their Kazakhstan base, launch base. On board were two very sensitive and heroic cosmonauts, and their mission was to rendezvous with the secret station. Anatoly, this is wonderful. I had no idea. And what is especially cool is the test for the Apollo-Soyuz flight is about détente. But when we come to this mission, it's about the Cold War. It's about commanding a military space station in orbit. Please introduce us to what you correctly call Almaz OPS-2. What was Almaz? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. So the Almaz is a very interesting program. So it's essentially the only space program in the world until today, actually, which saw the deployment of the actual piloted space station, the crewed space station, for exclusively for military purposes in orbit around the Earth. So the United States had a similar program, which they initiated in mid-60s, which was called MOL, Manned Orbital Laboratory, but it never actually was implemented. It never had crew on board. It only had some test launches without crew. But the Soviet Union went further. It's responded to this Air Force, U.S. Air Force program with its own program called Almaz, or we can translate it as Diamond, which was kind of secret, very classified name. And so we kind of go to the 1970s, and the Soviet Union at that time had two separate space programs to build a space station. It was the Salyut, which was a civilian scientific space station, which was similar in size and was actually based on Almaz, on Diamond project. However, Almaz stations, they could not be launched because of the high secrecy, because of absolute secrecy around this project. They were launched under names of Salyut, kind of to be camouflaged and kind of have a cover name. And then they would fly parallel crews. They would launch one crew to the civilian space station, and then the next one to the military one. And so they operated two programs at the same time. And Almaz, the main purpose of it, main military mission, was actually surveillance and reconnaissance. So they had very powerful camera on board. They actually planned all-weather radar, which was designed to be installed on the future incarnations of the station. So they started in early 70s flying actual crews. And the first one which reached the station was a Soyuz 14 mission, and it worked more or less successfully on board for 15 days, for a couple of weeks, and then it returned. And so it was, because of this, was very successful. They immediately, very quickly, within weeks, in August 1974, they launched the second mission, and that one ran into serious trouble with the automated rendezvous system, which was kind of standard design for all Soviet spacecraft. It was the robotic system which allowed the spacecraft to find the space station in space, to come to do the first rendezvous and to do final approach, all in automatic mode. Problem is, in this case, during the Soyuz 15 flight, during the final approach, when the spacecraft was around 40, 50 meters from the station, this robotic system decided that they were still a few kilometers away. And instead of actually slowing down and very kind of gradually and slowly coming in for a docking, it started actually accelerating the spacecraft. And crew was just fortunate that they passed within the 40 meters from the station going. They had huge kind of relative speed. If they collided, it would be deadly, deadly catastrophe. They would not survive this. And what's interesting, again, and kind of the lesson of this situation is that the crew on board with this little small window and periscope and in space with very difficult lighting condition, they didn't even realize that that's all what was happening. So automatic system, after the first near collision, it turned around and sent the spacecraft for the rendezvous one more time. And again, crew didn't understand. And then it did it three times. And only with all these communication problems and all this bad lighting and everything else, mission control finally realized that and kind of put a stop to it. And by that time, the Soyuz had only propellant left for landing. They could not dock anymore. They canceled the entire thing, and they had to do kind of urgent night landing 2 days later without reaching the station, and even though the plan was to leave on board Almaz and operate the station for, I think, for a month or something like that.
David, you have a question.
Anatoly, were the people in the Soviet Union, did they have any awareness of this military program and the Almaz station, or was everything kept from them too?
Absolutely not. Besides the people who were directly involved into the program inside Soviet Union, people who were kind of sworn to secrecy and had to put all kinds of sign, all kinds of documents not to reveal any of this information, nobody else knew, and nobody else, the very few people tried to kind of follow the program privately and suspect anything. But there were Western observers who noticed few things. They noticed, first of all, when the OPS-2, the second Almaz, was launched, they noticed that the amount of press and amount of coverage was much less. The second fact they noticed is this: both crew members aboard Soyuz 14 and Soyuz 15 were military pilots, which kind of broke the tradition, because normally it was the military pilot as a commander and the civilian flight engineer as the second crew member. So this was kind of hint that this particular salute, which they called officially Salute 3 at that point, because it was an order after two previous salute stations, there were suspicions that this was some special project, that it was different from everything else which was launched before. So, and of course, there were subsequent Almaz launches, and eventually kind of picture emerged that the Soviet Union operating two projects, military and civilian, at the same time. But it was, of course, unofficial. It was mostly all this research done in the West, where it was possible to publish that type of information. And so in the Soviet Union, no. We were, and like, you know, I was, as a kid, also was interested, and kind of we started getting information mostly from the West, from Western journals and magazines, that it was happening. But we didn't know. Nobody knew at that time in general public in the Soviet Union that this program was actually going on.
It can't be better than a secret program, but it is, because of a cosmonaut named Boris Volynov, a veteran of Soyuz 4 and 5. Tell us about Volynov. Is he still with us, or is he gone?
No, Boris Volynov is actually one of the few people who is still alive, I believe. So he's still in Moscow, and he gave a number of interviews during the post-Soviet period, which revealed a lot of secrets or unknown information about space program. And yes, he was one of the members of the secret group of cosmonauts which were trained specifically for the Almaz project. And he was one of the kind of because he was a veteran, he was one of the most experienced at that time when the Almaz project started in mid-60s. And in the 70s, he was on one of the crews which were training, and eventually he would fly on one of the later, most advanced Almaz stations launched later. But at that time, he was backing up. He served as a backup on the crew and actually was pushed further for next Almaz launch. We still don't know exact details. Why do we need to see more documents about what exactly this kind of rearrangement, reassignments in the crews happened? But he was in the program and he participated very, very closely in the training and everything else.
And so he told stories afterwards. Did he indicate life in the secret space station? I mean, this is a circle, cosmonauts within cosmonauts, right? They wouldn't have told the civilian cosmonauts wouldn't have known about this.
Again, the question to which extent the civilian cosmonauts were involved, but they were certainly everybody else were not involved in the training and the details of the, let's say, payloads, instruments which were installed on Almaz. Nobody besides beyond that particular group, they were not familiar with the details of the project at all. They probably knew because they were training together and because of they were using the same facilities. They obviously knew that there was a second parallel program going on. That was not impossible to hide within the program, but they didn't know any details. So Valinov and all the other guys who were in the Almaz, they were training, and few of them actually made interspace, and some of them actually did work on Almaz, which was OPS-2, and there was another station which was launched after that as well, which was also had two crews operating on board, including Valinov was one of them. The later OPS-3 station, which was launched a couple of years later.
The mission that almost ended in catastrophe was flown by two rookies, and when we come back, Anatoly Zak will help us understand how the rookies reacted to their near-death experience. David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show, Hotel Mars, I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.